Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
And welcome to another episode of the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. We are not recording from San Diego County Superior Courthouse because I was dismissed from jury duty. And since I was dismissed from jury duty, I can tell you more about what happened. So I showed up there on Monday, hoping that I would get assigned to a small case or a short case, or really what I hoped for was I would be dismissed early on in the morning. Instead, I was put in a jury pool with 100 other people for a trial that could last 6 weeks. Now, 30 people ended up being dismissed for economic hardship. Like if they took the case and they had to be there for 6 weeks and not be paid by their employer, your employer can't fire you because you've gone to jury duty, but they don't have to pay you. So there are people who said, look, I'm a full-time caregiver, or if I'm not paid for 6 weeks, I'm going to not be able to pay my rent or my mortgage. So about 30 people were dismissed, but that still left about 70 of us, which is a really large jury pool for selecting 12 jurors and two alternates for a trial. And this was a big deal. And then I later learned that Monday morning, I was thinking, I want to find a way to get out of this somehow. How can I weasel my way out of this? Then I was told that the charge, it's first-degree murder. This is the here's an article from the Times of San Diego talking about the incident that reflected the trial that I possibly served on. It says, ex-con arraigned in fatal shooting at homeless camp. An ex-con accused of fatally shooting a 67-year-old man at a homeless camp in Mission Valley pleaded not guilty Tuesday to a murder charge. This is back in April. Sekou Toure Bullock, 37, was arrested last Thursday on suspicion of killing Monty Pruel of San Diego, who was found dead in an open area off the 8800 block of Friars Road on the morning of April 3rd. This is actually less than a half mile from the church that I attend. So for immediate thing to think about. This thing's happened so near you and it's big deal to the community. Deputy District Attorney Megan Bruckner told Judge Jay Bloom that Bullock and a companion went to the victim's campsite in the early morning hours of April 3rd to ask him for money for a tire. The prosecutor alleged that Bullock pulled up the collar of his shirt to conceal his identity and shot Pruel once in the chest. When Bullock was arrested last Thursday, he was in possession of a long-barreled gun similar to the one used in the murder. Buckner said. Bullock, who has been to prison four times, faces 83 years and 4 months behind bars if convicted, the prosecutor said. The judge called the defendant an extreme danger to the community and ordered him held on $2 million bail. Now, when I was in the jury pool, we were admonished during our breaks. We couldn't talk to people about the case. We couldn't talk to each other about the case. And we weren't allowed to look this up. Now, that only applied while you were still serving on the jury, either formally on the jury or part of the juror pool. So I had no idea about this. And I resisted the urge. I didn't go online to Google this to learn what this was about. And so, I had been thinking, I should try to get out of this. And you're tempted to want to weasel your way out. But then this tremendous sense of guilt came over me, that the thought of, what if I cheated or twisted the truth to get out of this and wasn't on the jury when God wanted me to be there? And because I wasn't there, either an innocent man went to jail for the rest of his life, or a murderer went back out into my community to strike again. Like, that could happen if the jury gets this wrong. And so I felt this sense of guilt, like, oh my gosh, if I try to weasel my way out of this, what if one of these terrible things happened because of what I did? So I made sure in the jury selection process just to be totally honest. I was honest about possible biases, about my job, my work, and that certainly got me dismissed. I mean, most people were dismissed. There were 70 of us. They only needed 14. So nearly everyone was dismissed, and I among them, for a variety of reasons. I have strong moral and religious beliefs. I think one reason I was dismissed is because I have this podcast. They, in fact, asked me during the deliberation process where they kind of interview the jurors about the podcast, because here's the thing. If I was still serving on the jury, I could not tell anybody else about this case. If I slipped up and said something about the case here on this podcast, and then other people were talking to me in the comment section, or I was engaging with essentially the press, a mistrial could be declared. The whole trial could be for naught. So I'm sure they looked at me as a big red warning flag, and then I was quickly dismissed from that. So I feel good that I was honest with them. If God wanted me to be on that jury, I cooperated. I just think that he desired me to be here in the Catholic Answers studios to share the faith with you. And maybe there's another jury he wants me to be on. So if you're called to jury duty, remember your civic responsibility. Be honest. Somebody could be counting on you. Before we continue, though, with the rest of the interview, I want to remind people that we have bonus content that's gone up today. We've got new lessons from my catechism study series and my church history study series. My goal is to have in scripture, catechism, church history, maybe other subject matter, 100 easy lessons that will be available for patrons of the podcast. If you are a patron at trendhornpodcast.com, you get access to that bonus content, this private study series. In a week or two, I'll have another Trent Tracks up on how to prove Jesus is God. If you're a silver subscriber or higher, you get access to that. If you want access to this bonus content, be sure to go and check out trendhornpodcast.com. But the Catechism and Church History Study Series, those are up today. And I'm super excited about those. You get access to those as little audio clips to listen through. Eventually, I'm thinking of releasing them as a book, The Catechism and 100 Easy Lessons, Church History, 100 Easy Lessons, and possibly on an app, you know, the Council of Trent podcast app, where you could go through, learn the Catechism and 100 Easy Lessons, learn church history, learn the New Testament and 100 Easy Lessons, and go through the app and learn and maybe do true-false multiple choice questions, earn points, maybe exchange them for bonus content, all kinds of great stuff. But to make that happen, we need subscribers who financially support the podcast to keep growing this area. And in return, you get access to the bonus content early, long before anybody else. If you want that, if you want to help the podcast to grow, definitely check out trendhornpodcast.com. And so, though, without further ado, I would like to finish off my interview here with Brandon Vaught on how to evangelize atheists. Thank you guys so much, and keep on supporting us. So let's move on, though. What are some other just the common arguments you see atheists make on the website and in the com boxes?
Sure. Bouncing off a previous question you asked, like, what are some of the unique characteristics of atheists? And a lot of the atheists that I find online are very scientifically astute. In fact, they know way more about science than me or most Catholic philosophers and theologians that comment on the site. And so at Strange Notions, many of the objections we have are scientific objections. So, for instance, some of them have said on multiple occasions that things like quantum mechanics prove that things can pop into existence from nothing uncaused, that we have a scientific example of something coming into being without cause or previous existence, and therefore the universe as a whole could have done the same thing itself. And so they use sort of these scientific arguments against arguments for God, such as the Kalam cosmological argument. Other atheists pit science against Catholicism in the realm of biology, claiming that Darwin's theory of evolution somehow conflicts with arguments for God or somehow conflicts with Catholicism. And unfortunately, in both cases, there's either a key misunderstanding pertaining to science or there's a key misunderstanding pertaining to religion. So in the first case, with the quantum mechanics example, it's not true that things pop into existence without cause or without any parameters, that there are necessary factors that that are required in order for these quantum particles to come into existence. So they are caused in a sense. And then in the other case, there's been several books and articles written, much ink spilled on the compatibility between Catholicism and evolution, at least as long as it doesn't pertain to the soul. But in many of these cases, they're just confusions more than strong arguments that need to be cleared up.
Where do you see atheists sometimes, a lot of the common arguments they make, do you think many of the arguments are just based on misunderstandings of the evidence and reasons that people offer for God?
I think so. Again, with the risk of overgeneralizing, I think that if most atheists are smart and good-willed, they're not trying to put over a bad argument on you just to score a point.
Right.
And if they're smart, logical thinkers, then I think the only possibility is that they're mistaken about their premises or they're confused about a key term. So in most cases, that's what I'm looking for when I'm engaging an atheist. If I see him make an argument against Christianity that seems pretty strong, my first reaction is to think, well, is he using terms the right way? Are the terms clearly defined? Is he not equivocating throughout his argument? And how's the logic stack up? Has he fallen into any logical fallacies? So those are the things I begin to look at first. And most of the time, I find that there's a pivotal point of confusion that lies at the heart of his error.
Okay, and then I didn't know if you had any other common arguments we see before. I'd like to move on to just some kind of general advice. But are there any other common arguments that you always just come across? It's just kind of the bane of your existence.
Sure. There's lots of variations on the problem of evil. In general, why does so much evil and suffering happen in the world with an all-powerful, all-loving God? I know you'll talk about that elsewhere in the interview series. Mm-hmm. But then also in particular, why did God let this happen to me? Why mm-hmm. did God, you know, have this happen to my family member or mm-hmm. to me? So, I mean, those are very difficult, delicate issues to engage, not insurmountable, but they're problematic, they're difficult.
Yeah.
And then also, I'll give you one last one that comes up again and again, is the sort of divine hiddenness argument, mm-hmm. that why doesn't God make himself more obvious to people? You know, if God really wants everyone to enter into a loving relationship with him, why doesn't he just paint those words in the sky with the stars, you know, or why doesn't he just reincarnate himself and come and tell me that himself face to face? So, I mean, and there's no real easy answer. The honest answer for Catholics is we don't know why God does everything that he does. Mm-hmm. We do know that he wants everyone to be saved. And some philosophers would say that this world is the optimal world to save the most people possible. I mean, the real answer is we don't know why God doesn't say paint his name in the stars or come visit individuals. So it's a strong argument. I think the cumulative weight of all the arguments in God's favor significantly outweigh that. But I can understand why it's a important argument for many atheists.
Right. And just the fact that we say, I don't know, it doesn't follow then that there is no answer. Like, for example, I could say, well, I have good reason to think God exists. I may not know why God allows X to happen, but if I know God exists and he's all good and all powerful, he must have a good reason. And I'm not in a position to know he doesn't. For example, Brandon, wouldn't you say that for many atheists, they would say, you know, I don't know why the Big Bang happened, or there's many things in science we don't know, but you can't just plug God's existence into simply what we don't know. You could almost reverse that to say, just because there's things in the world we don't know why God allows it to happen, you can't plug atheism into those gaps.
That's right, unless you end up with an atheism of the gaps sort of argument.
Right.
I think you're right. So at worst, it's just the troublesome point for Christians to consider, but at best, it's not a real argument against God, so there's no real force behind it.
A question. Why did God do this? Why does God do that?
Right.
You can ask questions all day, but it isn't an argument. And I think that's one of the great things about Strange Notions, because Paul was in Greece and Athens, you know, where Socrates and Plato, he was engaging people in argument. And I think your site's really oriented around, you know, premises and reasoning and how we support conclusions and all that. But what advice would you give, though, to Catholics who just kind of get overwhelmed by just the sheer number of arguments and counterarguments atheists will make, that they'll go on the site? And I've had emails from people saying, you know, there's just so much out there and I'm overwhelmed by it, and my faith has been shaken because there's all of these different things people are referencing. What's some advice you give to someone who's overwhelmed in that regard?
Good question. I'd recommend a few things. First of all, and I don't say this just because I'm talking to you, but I think everyone should pick up your book, Answering Atheism, because it provides the best lay of the land that I know of. So it'll quickly get you up to speed on the strongest arguments for Christianity and the strongest arguments for atheism. And so that book alone will clear up a lot of confusion and give you a lot of confidence in engaging these sorts of discussions. But a second thing I would recommend, and this is a strategy I've learned from you guys at Catholic Answers, you guys often use it during your radio show, is to ask somebody this question. If I was able to answer that argument, or if I was able to show you why that argument wasn't strong, would you then believe in God? And I've asked that question several times, and most of the time people would say, well, no, you know, I still have other issues. Well, okay, well, then what's the really big issue that's preventing you from believing in God? What's the strongest argument you know of against God's existence? So what you want to do is sort of get around these various side arguments and counter-arguments and get to what they consider to be the strongest, most difficult objection to God, because presumably if you can answer that, then all the other ones underneath it should be answerable as well. So don't waste your time going back and forth with somebody on 30 different arguments. Try to get to the one that means the most to them, the one that they think is strongest or the most formidable.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's very helpful advice, because obviously you don't want to chase a bunch of rabbit trails. We want to get to the core objection, and then we can be focused on that and not be overwhelmed by just the sheer number of objections that are out there. Well, moving on, let's look at misconceptions people have. And I think what's great about Strange Notions is that people can engage in dialogue and see where they've misunderstood each other. So where atheists may not understand God or Christianity or Catholicism, where atheists, they've misunderstood something very important, but also where Catholics misunderstand atheism. So let's talk about that a little bit before we go back to our atheist friends. Randall Rouser, who is an evangelical philosopher and Christian apologist, has just recently released a book called Is the Atheist My Neighbor? And it kind of helps to bust these misconceptions or incorrect views Christians have of atheism. For example, the idea that atheists really do believe in God. They do believe in God, but they suppress that belief so that they can lead wicked lives. So things along those lines, I'm sure you could comment. Most atheists probably aren't like that, that you engage in. But what are some ways that Catholics sometimes misunderstand atheism?
Yeah, good question. I think, well, there's a lot here because there's a lot of misconceptions that, as with any population, until you really get to know some, you engage them, it's very easy to mischaracterize them and have misconceptions. So among Catholic friends I have who aren't really engaging with atheists, some of the most common misconceptions I've seen are that because atheists presume to have no source of objective morality, that they're therefore immoral, that they live sort of debaucherous lives, and there's no really right or wrong for them. They can do whatever they want, and so they sort of live these morally dubious lives, when just the opposite is true, at least in my experience. Many of the atheists I know are extremely compassionate and generous and morally upstanding. So I think that mischaracterization needs to end. It's particularly unhelpful when trying to engage or evangelize an atheist, because as soon as you presume that they're morally dubious simply because they're an atheist, that's going to shut down the conversation right from the beginning, and you don't really have any hope. So that's one major misconception. Another one is that most atheists are just unthinking simpletons who choose not to believe in God. Where I've found that many of the atheists I've talked to are genuinely, sincerely doubtful that there are strong arguments for God. They've read books, they've read papers and articles, they've tried to understand the position from both sides, yet they still can't find themselves convinced that God exists. Mm-hmm. And so there are many atheists, and I don't want to put a percentage on how many of them fit this bill, but there are many who are sincere and genuine and thoughtful. So I think it'd be a bad idea to go into a conversation thinking that, well, they just want to be atheists because they don't want to, say, abide by the moral standards of Catholicism.
Right.
For many of them, their atheism is predicated on the arguments as they read them.
Well, what's interesting, Brandon, is sometimes online or on Twitter or in other places, when I engage atheists on the question and I don't have a lot of time, when they make kind of assertions like there's no evidence for God and other things like that, I sometimes ask this question to see if they fall into the camp you're talking about, which is the well-read, sincere atheists, or just the ones who've jumped on the bandwagon and like the identity. And it's this question, what would you say is the best critique of religion, or the best critique of the existence of God, best defense of atheism, if you will? And then what do you think is the best defense of theism, or the best arguments for the existence of God. Like, who makes the best case for your position and who makes the best case against it? And a lot of times that opens the divide, because I have atheists who kind of stammer and they haven't answered that question for themselves. They've watched a few YouTube videos and that's it. And so they can't tell me even the title of a book they've ever read. But then I find the others that you're talking about, which can rattle off a list of names that many other people wouldn't recognize, but you and I would recognize. So have you've probably discovered kind of these two different groups among atheists yourself.
I have, and those are fantastic questions to ask. So I'd echo them that anybody engaging atheists, those would be good questions to lead with. There's also one other one. I picked it up from either from you or somebody else, I think, at Catholic Answers. And they said, what is the best argument for God, and what's wrong with it? What do you think the problems are?
Oh, yes.
And I found that when I asked this question, I've asked it scores of times over the last few years, and more than 90% of the time, the answer has something to do with the biological complexity of living organisms. So sort of like the intellectual or the intelligent design argument that
right. There
are things that are so complex, we don't know how they could have been created except for God. But then science comes in and shows us how they could have came into being, and therefore we don't need God.
Mm-hmm.
But for many Christian thinkers, you and me and many others, that's one of the weaker arguments for God. If I was ranking my arguments, it probably wouldn't make the top 20.
Right.
And so I'm actually happy when I hear that answer, because it tells me that that person really hasn't been exposed to the best of the best arguments for God. But you won't know that until you ask questions like the ones you're mentioning.
Mm-hmm. So let's look into that then, some of the atheist misconceptions of Catholicism, you know, when it comes to the existence of God and other things like that. It's funny you bring up intelligent design, because I've found that most of the defenders of intelligent design are not Catholic. They tend to be evangelicals. There's a few Catholics here and there, but most Catholic thinkers have kind of rejected this. So when atheists misunderstand the arguments for God and misunderstand the church, other things like that, I found, and I'd like to get your comments on this, that they're sort of attacking a straw man version of Christianity basically created by evangelicals, that it's kind of these intelligent design arguments for God and then a fundamentalist view of the Bible that says every word in the Bible is literally true. Do you think that this evangelical presentation of Christianity, that's the thing that atheists tend to be the most exposed to, and that can cause them to have kind of these misunderstandings of classical theism, like what St. Thomas Aquinas and St. Augustine believed in?
I absolutely think you're right. And that's why we set up Strange Notions, to particularly be a website where atheists and Catholics come to dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
When I first created the site, I got emails from several well-known Protestant philosophers and theologians asking if they could kind of come up and contribute, and I respectfully declined, not because I necessarily disagreed with their arguments,
mm-hmm.
but we needed a place where the Catholic case for God could be put up against the atheist case, because
mm-hmm.
the Protestant faith is quite different, as all of us know, in many ways, particularly in regards to the Bible and the interpretive framework for understanding the Bible. And so times, even though we've set the site up this way, many times the atheists on our website will object to something in the Bible,
mm-hmm.
or they'll reject to some tenet of faith, and then we have to carefully point out, well, that's not really how Catholics understand the Bible.
Right.
Or we could say, some Catholics understand the Bible that way, but you don't have to. The magisterium gives you leeway on that particular passage. So I think it's important that when Catholics are engaging atheists, that you make sure that the God or the faith that atheists is rejecting is not the Protestant version, but a distinctly Catholic version.
No, I think that's incredibly important, especially when we talk about the Bible, and we'll be having our own series here on how to help atheists understand Scripture. But do you find that a lot of times when you're engaging atheists on Strange Notions and others, asking them why they don't believe in God, a lot of times they jump to, well, here's this bad thing in the Bible. But it's quite a logical leap to say there's this bad thing in the Bible I disagree with, or this thing that appears to be man-made, to there is no God. Is that something you come across frequently?
Oh, absolutely. I think some of the most common arguments against God pertain to what Pope Benedict called the dark passages of the Bible. So these uber violent passages throughout Numbers and Deuteronomy about whole populations being slaughtered and whatnot, those are often put forward as sort of strong arguments against God's existence. But in reality, they, first of all, presume God's existence. So they only have weight if God exists. Mm-hmm. They only have weight if objective morality exists, if things are truly good or truly bad. And so it kind of gives away the game. William Lane Craig, when he's challenged on these sorts of issues, likes to say that these are really in-house questions because they concern what God is like and the character of interpreting the scriptures. And so these are questions that are maybe difficult, but they're important for Christians to answer once somebody has already decided that there are good reasons to believe in God. But they're really independent of the question, does God exist? And therefore, they shouldn't be used as arguments for or against God.
Right, exactly, because there are other approaches to some of these quote-unquote dark passages. In fact, I think one of the contributors to your site is Dr. Matthew Ramage, the assistant professor of theology at Benedictine College, and he himself has written a book, it was published just a few years ago, called Dark Passages of the Bible, Engaging Scripture with Benedict XVI and Thomas Aquinas. And I love that these articles are on your website because it allows atheists, we can say, hey, wait a minute, there's this Catholic approach to Scripture to say to some of these passages that you object to, maybe they're not literal or maybe they're meant to be taken in a different light, an approach that they've never actually been exposed to.
That's right. I think there's a common misunderstanding among atheists is that if a certain phrase or a certain command appears in the Bible, then it's directly and immediately attributable to God. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Catholic interpretive framework is so much more nuanced than that. There are so many other considerations. Dr. Mirage points out many of them that need to be considered, such as God's progressively revealing himself to a culture, to literary techniques like allegory and metaphor. This isn't all to explain those passages, which are in some cases still troubling,
right,
but it's to acknowledge, contrary to fundamental Protestants, Catholics don't read the Bible in a straight-laced, literal way. And so when we have dialogue, that fact needs to be recognized before we even begin to discuss Scripture.
Okay, well, as we come to kind of the close of our time together, I guess my last question would just be this. What should Catholics do to become better ambassadors of the faith to atheists? It can seem kind of overwhelming to, you know, confront these scientific and philosophical arguments and people who can be very angry and vitriolic. So what are some concrete steps that Catholics can do so they can become better ambassadors to this growing number of people in our culture?
Sure. I'll say a few things. First of all, we remember Pope Paul VI's adage that modern man listens more willingly to witnesses than to teachers. And if he does listen to teachers, it's because they're witnesses first. And his point was that modern man is far more compelled by a lot that's lived on fire for God, that's truly transformed to where it's desirable and imitable. So even more than strong arguments, I think people are won over by the character of individual Christians. So first of all, be a saint, be holy, be generous, be charitable. If you're not any of that, then your arguments are just going to fall on deaf ears. So that's step number one. Step number two, which we've talked about a few times already, is to come to the atheist or come to your interlocutor with a spirit of charity and sincerity. So ask questions, be humble. Don't come there assuming that you're just going to set them right and you're going to talk down and get all your points in so you can win the intellectual battle. Mm-hmm. Come there in a genuine spirit of dialogue that you want to know what they think, you want to together journey toward truth, and you'll be far more effective. And then finally, we've hit on this again a few times, ask questions. Not only do I think it leads to more fruitful dialogue, but it could also mask some of your own ignorance. If you don't know how to respond to a particular challenge or objection, ask a question. Say, well, what do you mean by that? Or where did you get that idea from? Or tell me, can you give me some places where I can learn more about that? So questions, I think, are the most important tool in the arsenal of the Catholic evangelist. So if you can do those three things, if you have a holy life that draws atheists and agnostics to it, And then if you could treat them with charity and sincerity, and then if you ask a lot of questions, I think you'll be light years ahead of where most Catholics are in engaging atheists.
And then obviously I would encourage Catholics to just go to your website, Strange Notions, read some of the articles there, even go to the recommended books category, and you can start to see what are some good books to read and just slowly accrue knowledge on this important issue. Finally, I guess as we come to a close here, Brandon, where can people learn more about what you do, about your resources, and about everything that's coming out from Word on Fire and from Strange Notions?
Great question. So strangenotions.com, you mentioned that. I have a personal blog where I write on some of these issues at brandonvogt.com, VOGT.com. And then, of course, at Word on Fire, you can find all of Father Barron's resources at wordonfire.org. We have several different videos and articles, both aimed at atheists and helping Catholics to engage atheists. And I mentioned that we came out with this video series recently, which has been very well received. It's called The Mystery of God, Who God Is and Why He Matters. And Father Barron outlines this classical understanding of God. What do we mean when we say that word, and why do we mean it? And you wrote this fantastic study guide to go along with the series. So it's a perfect fit if you want to struggle through these questions in a community, like in a small group in your parish or with a group of your friends or family. So check that out at mysteryofgod.com.
Very good. And thank you so much for speaking with us today, Brandon. And we will pray that your work continues to bear abundant fruit. And the harvest is plenty, but we need a lot more laborers out there to reach those who aren't religious or identify as atheists. So thank you so much for sitting down with us today.
Well, thank you, Trent. And I wanted to emphasize that you and all the good folks at Catholic Answers are the real leaders in this field. So thank you guys for your great example and leadership.
No problem. Have a good one.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.